Welcome back into Super Bracket Bros. My name is Jay, your host and your personal bracketologist. And as always, sitting across from me, I am joined by Elias Stokes, your skeleton boy. How you doing today, Eli?
I feel like singing a shanty, but I know many people are not feeling like hearing a shanty, so I will refrain from singing a shanty.
That is much appreciated by me and the people, Eli.
But I am definitely in a pirating yo-ho-ho mood.
Well, that is good, because today we are going to be discussing one of your favorite characters of all time. First, we should discuss, what is this podcast?
Yes, Jay, what is Super Bracket Bros?
Super Bracket Bros is the podcast where we have taken 32 fictional characters, put them in a grand tournament against each other to see just who is the best of the best. Each episode, we break the tournament down, matchup by matchup. And today is the first true entry into Season 2. We are into our first matchup. We're going to be talking about Brook from One Piece, the sixth seed of the East for, you know, all our One Piece needs. And I have recently reacquainted myself with Teen Titans, as in I've watched the entire show over the course of the last week. And that is not an exaggeration.
I mean, it's a quality show. And I tried to binge all of One Piece. Didn't work.
No.
I didn't even get to Brook. Brook didn't show up.
You know, from the little I know, that is not very surprising about One Piece. But so let's get into it here. So how this works, you know, refresher on the round of 32 is what we're going to be doing today is we're going to be breaking down each of these characters, talk about where they came from, how they came to be in their universes, and sort of where they fit. And then, you know, so that's going to be the first half of the show. Then we have a very special halftime suggested by a listener that we're going to be going over. And just a heads up, if you have an idea for a matchup we should discuss, make sure you let us know on Instagram or Facebook, or email us at superbracketbros@gmail.com. Any and all suggestions, we will be sure to butcher it on this show for you. And of course, last but not least, what you all came here for, the last half of the show is going to be us discussing who would win in a fight and who is going to be moving on in this tournament to go up against the winner of next week's episode. But first, before we get to that, like I said, let's talk about these characters. So where do you want to start, Brook or Cyborg?
Well, I mean, I could talk about Brook for ages, so we should probably get Cyborg out of the way.
Let's talk about some Cyborg. So I've, you know, done a little bit of investigating into Cyborg. The Cyborg specifically that we're going to be talking about, because he's originally a comic character, he has many, many, many iterations. We're going to be focusing on the Cyborg from the Teen Titans show that aired on Cartoon Network.
Yeah, I'm not talking about the Zack Snyder film, because that Cyborg was... He was very angsty.
He's very angsty, which, like, Cyborg in his iterations, like, has those characteristics because he has, like, a pretty tragic backstory, you know?
But
like,
I'm so used to Teen Titans Cyborg. It was such a far departure.
Like he's the always the... And from my understanding, like, the Cyborg in Teen Titans is a cheerier than what you normally get, even from the comics and from his history and stuff like that. So it's... interesting to learn more about him and to see where he came from. He first appears in a special insert of DC Comics Presents number 26 back in October of 1980. So actually a more recent creation compared to a lot of other comic book characters,
all things considered.
And it's interesting, the DC Comic Book Presents was a series of comics that essentially was just a pure team up line. So, like, it featured, you know, Superman and Green Lantern and Batman and Wonder Woman and all these different combinations, and it was purely just a line of comics to bring these characters together and put them in stories. And it was actually an insert that introduced Cyborg along with Starfire and Raven. All three of them made their first appearance together in this comic.
Huh.
Yeah.
I guess that's why they chose them for the modern at the time, the Teen Titans cartoon.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense, like, looking back. And the actual story of that insert was Robin was going to investigate a terrorist attack, and he underwent this sort of vision. And because in this vision, that's where he met Cyborg, Starfire, and Raven. And in this vision, you know, they didn't understand why he didn't recognize them, and they go through this whole thing. And actually, their mission during this vision is that they have to go defeat this gelatinous cube that's been summoned from a different dimension by Cyborg's father.
Gelatinous cube!
And not only this, like, this is so, like, comic booky, but the gelatinous cube was going to destroy all life on Earth by converting all of the oxygen to methane.
Of all apocalyptic scenarios, I would not want gelatinous cube to happen. Not because it's any worse, but
just because
I don't want, like, the world to end from a big blobby cube.
That is fair. That is very fair. And like,
give me a respectable apocalypse.
Like Trigon, please. Yeah, like, I'll take respectable.
Brimstone, fire, and demons. Yeah. Not just a D&D surprise enemy.
And it turned out that this vision was actually given to him by Raven in the current moment. And it was actually a vision of the future of them when they were the Teen Titans. And so this was... It's seemingly, like, looking back, like, as not a big comic book reader, like, unnecessarily convoluted, but that's just how things are. And then in the 2011 New 52 reboot of the DC Comics, Cyborg was reintroduced as one of the founding members of the Justice League. And then, you know, like, his backstory has gone through a lot of iterations, but, you know, it's always he was this athletic high schooler or college kid that was, you know, destined for athletic greatness, when he almost always undergoes like some sort of tragic accident. And with this accident, almost every incarnation, his mother dies in this accident, his father survives, his father's a scientist, and he rebuilds Cyborg from nothing. And specifically, like, if you watch Justice League, he uses the Mother Box, which I think was the same as one of the comic iterations as well.
It's always interesting. Cyborg, in my purview, has always, you know, been that bridge between Teen Titans and the Justice League.
Mm-hmm.
In all these iterations, he's either in, you know, young enough to be in the Teen Titans, but old enough to be in the Justice League, and he keeps flip-flopping between different media.
Well, yeah, exactly. And, like, in the Teen Titans show, I mean, you can tell, like, he's the oldest of the group for sure. And I think, you know, that's what puts him at odds with Robin a lot, because Robin's the de facto leader, but Cyborg is always right there. And, you know, that's one of his biggest plot lines, you know, with Brother Blood and the Hive and that scenario, where he is trying to prove that he is man enough, that he is leader enough to be able to take on those responsibilities.
Now, Cyborg, don't fall to pieces. I have defeated you, but at least you won't be alone. Say hello to your classmates.
Cyborg!
No! You should have accepted my first offer, Cyborg. I would have made a man out of you. I still could, you know.
You can take your offer and blow it out your...
Insolent child! Where is it, Cyborg? I've combed through your blueprints, peeled back your armor, stripped off your machinery. But still you defy me. Where in this vile contraption is the part that allows you to resist?
It's not in the circuitry, is it? It's not the machine that resists you. It's me, my spirit. That's the part you can't break. I don't need you to make me a man. I already am one.
The Teen Titans show that we're referring to ran from July 19th, 2003 to January 16th, 2006. Had a total of 5 seasons at 13 episodes each, and also included a movie, Teen Titans Trouble in Tokyo, which debuted in September of 2006 on Cartoon Network.
Which is appropriate, because I loved that Teen Titans cartoon so much.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing I loved is all of its anime influences, so the fact it had a...
Trouble in Tokyo?
Yeah, it's just so perfect.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I unfortunately I didn't look into like the ending of the show or how that all came about to be, but it definitely did seem a little abrupt, even though like now that I've done like since we did last season, like researching Danny Phantom and The Last Airbender and looking forward to like Ben 10 and this tournament and stuff, like all of these shows lasted like 3 seasons, maybe 4 at the most, because like all of these cartoons were designed to just like run for a couple seasons and then be good reruns for the next 10 years.
Yeah.
You know, so like they weren't designed to go for 5 seasons, you know, let alone a movie. You know, it kind of shows, you know, Teen Titans anime influences. I mean, like everyone says that like Avatar, like is it an anime or is it not? Like Teen Titans, that's the real conversation.
Like, oh yeah, they do like the whole anime like sweat beads and
exactly
like eyes,
like the way over exaggerated expressions where, or like impossible things that are happening. Like there's a moment where Beast Boy like grabs Cyborg's arm and like pumps him like a water pump and oil starts coming out of his joints, you know, like, or you know, Cyborg's head grows the size of a room to eat 50 pies at once. You know, like all of these things happen, you know, like, and but it's the style of the show.
Yeah, and that's also what I love about the show is how it balances those silly moments but also pretty weighty emotional beats too, because mm-hmm. it is largely an episodic show, but within each episode mm-hmm. it's pretty amazing how the writers were able to cram all this character development in.
Yeah, like that's definitely like the shining spot of the show is the character development, and like Cyborg, like he sort of like reaches his peak, not necessarily his peak, but like his moment comes about halfway through the series where he has his major opponent in Brother Blood and the Hive, where, you know, he's the one that's sent to infiltrate the school, and then like he's the one that can't be mind controlled by Brother Blood, so, and Brother Blood wants to understand. And then that what makes the climax great for that rivalry is, you know, Cyborg comes to the realization that it's not because of his circuitry that keeps him from being mind controlled. It's him, you know, it's his spirit. And so it, like, you know, the resiliency that the character shows is really fantastic.
And another episode that was very Cyborg focused that for me, like as a young age, really stuck with me was when he fought Atlas how he's like, I can't go over 100%. My programming won't allow it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, at the end when he's fighting this character, you see his meter go to 100% and then he pushes it and it goes to 110.
Yeah.
It's just such a satisfying
moment. It's such a good moment.
Because it's very, you know, that plus ultra like.
And the last thing I'll mention as far as Cyborg goes is like one of the best moments that he has is actually with Starfire. It's in the middle of season 4, an episode called Trock. I don't know if you recall that episode at all. The silver alien guy crash lands, or he doesn't crash land, but he comes in like dogfighting a couple other spaceships above the tower. And he essentially like he comes in, he talks to the Titans and he's chatting them up, but calls Starfire Trock, but none of the other Titans understand what it means, and Starfire is, you know, like just treated poorly by him, and really nobody knows why, and it's not understood. And Cyborg, you know, asks Starfire, what's Trock mean? And she replies, oh, it's nothing, you know, and so you don't think much of it. Later in the episode, Cyborg calls Starfire Trock, and she gets livid with him and super angry at him, and, you know, says like, you don't say that, like that's not okay, and explains that the word literally means nothing, that Starfire is nothing. It's a term used for her people, her alien race, you know, by the other race of alien that I can't even remember his name, the Silver Surfer looking guy.
The dick.
Yeah, the dick. And Cyborg has this great moment like of understanding. He's like, you know, like people judge me based on my looks all the time, like I'm half robot, like I get it. And you know, that's a moment from the show that like really exemplifies like how it tackles adult themes, but puts them in a kid package, you know, that kids can understand, and makes it a really great show.
Right, for the kids, it's, oh yeah, he's part robot. For the adults, there's obviously more extraneous circumstances.
Exactly, yeah.
Way to go, Trocky!
You do not call me that!
But Valyor calls you Troc all the time.
That does not make it right.
What's up? I thought you said it didn't mean anything.
No, I said it means nothing. When Valyor calls me Trock, he is saying that I am worthless. A nothing.
Star.
There are those on other planets who feel Tamaranians are inferior. Trock is what they call us.
So he's calling you a terrible name. And you know that if you punch him out, it'll just confirm all the bad stuff he thinks about you.
Yes. You know what it feels like to be judged simply because of how you look?
Of course I do. I'm part robot. Let's go find Robin.
And I think, and we'll get into Cyborg's powers and abilities in just a few minutes here, but let's hop over to Brooke, and I will turn it over to Eli here to talk your ear off for a second.
Yo ho 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 ho.
He's standing on a soapbox, ladies and gentlemen.
So Brooke is from the manga and anime One Piece. Mm-hmm. He was created by Eiichiro Oda. He first shows up in chapter 455. And for audience out there, One Piece just released, I think, chapter 984.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So Brooke is almost like he's in that halfway point. He's not a character who's been there the whole time. He showed up halfway, and he's pretty instantly recognizable because he's a walking, talking, living skeleton.
Yeah, yeah. Eli's talked to me a lot about One Piece characters, and to be honest, it's hit or miss. It's a flip of the coin whether or not I remember the picture he associated with the name, but I always remembered Brooke because he is a walking skeleton with a giant afro and a tiny hat.
Yep. So Brooke is the ninth member of the Straw Hat Pirates. He's the ninth person to join Luffy's crew. That's why he shows up so late. Mm-hmm. And it's actually funny. He's the ship's musician, which is funny because Luffy, when he started out, the first crew mate he wanted, he said, was a musician. So
oh,
it's just
really?
Funny, the second to last one.
Oh my god.
It took him that long, which is also funny because he wanted a musician before like a doctor or a navigator, you know.
Yeah, that sounds like the Luffy we know.
And to give Brooke's personality sort of a general idea, if you thought Luffy was this upbeat, like peppy anime boy, Brooke is on another tier of like just insane, quirky, just eccentric happiness.
Yeah.
And part of that is comes from his character and being a musician. He almost sees it as his job to make everybody around him laugh and be happy. So he's constantly, you know, cracking jokes, doing dumb gags. He's canonic. I think he's like 90 years old, but he behaves like an 8-year-old.
Yeah.
But that, like I said, that's almost part of the honor thing. It's just like, it's his job to make everybody happy.
Yeah.
And he takes that very seriously. I should explain why he's a skeleton.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you.
Okay. So it's a whole thing, but let me start. So in One Piece, there are these things called devil fruits. If you eat one, you get superpowers. Luffy ate one. He ate the gum gum fruit. His body's made of rubber. That's a superpower. Brooke ate an interesting devil fruit called the Revive fruit. Mm-hmm. And it's not like a lot of devil fruits that can be activated on command. His fruit only activated when he died. Mm-hmm. So Brooke died, like straight up.
Okay.
And basically what the Revive fruit does is it gives you a one-up, essentially. You get to live another life.
Okay.
That's not the reason why he's a skeleton.
Okay.
So when you die with the Revive fruit, your soul comes down from the sky and has to physically go back into your body.
Okay.
But Brooke died lost at sea in a foggy, basically Bermuda Triangle situation.
Sure.
So his spirit got lost. And when he found his body, it had turned into a skeleton.
Gotcha. Okay. So he was going to like return as is normal.
And flesh and blood
and bones.
Yeah.
Brooke. But like the ship kept moving when his soul came down and just missed him. But his soul still had to find his way back to his body.
Yes. And when he found
See,
it.
Like,
it
was... And now. Now, I know this is weird, but at least it's just one story. You know, yeah. Like, at least, like, you just had to know the one thing that happened and didn't have to, like, find the 15 different ways Brooke came to be, like, Cyborg.
Oh, yeah, no. Yeah. It's just One Piece. That's
yeah,
it.
Like, exactly. I will give that to One Piece. Like, it is nice for that reason.
It's kind of like if you're into the comics, it's almost like archaeological dig, trying to find all the pieces. With this, it's just an endurance. Like, you're
like, it's there.
You can access
find number one today.
And so it's played for laughs, I should mention. Like, Brooke, like, to give you an idea of how upbeat he is when he turned into a skeleton, he was like, okay, and basically just went on his merry way. Another element of his tragic backstory is, like you said, that he was lost at sea in basically a Bermuda Triangle situation where it's constant fog. It's an unnavigable ocean. So he was lost at sea for like 40 years, essentially.
As a skeleton.
As a skeleton, so he didn't need to eat or anything.
Gotcha. Trying to escape the sea, which obviously he eventually did.
Yeah, there's this whole thing with another pirate crew, but essentially circumstances happened where Brooke couldn't leave the ocean. He found his way, but extenuating circumstances.
Gotcha.
And then serendipitously, the one Luffy found him, and literally, like, the crew was just like, this guy's a demon, like, we can't bring him because skeletons aren't a regular thing.
Yeah, there are a lot of regular things that, like, no one blinks at in One Piece, but a skeleton is not one of those things.
Nope. And Luffy, first thing, goes up and says, you're cool, you want to join my crew? And the first thing Brooke says is, okay.
Why, good afternoon, yo! Thank you all for stopping by. You must excuse me for not greeting you properly before. I really was quite surprised. It's been so many years, you see, wandering these waters all alone. I'm so used to ghost ships that humans frightened me. Quite ironic, isn't it? Ah, but please, come inside and take a seat. I'm sure you have many tales to share.
Look! It can talk! It's a singing, talking afro skeleton!
Well, I'll be damned. Huh? Anyway, how is it that you can sing and talk like that when you're nothing but bones? Are you really the living dead or what? Also, why are you here? And what the hell happened to this ship? These waters aren't really haunted, are they? We need answers.
Hold on. Huh? I got one for you. You ready? Will you join our crew?
Yes, certainly.
Yeah, ever since he joined after that arc, you know, he's just been a constant member. Like, he gets along with pretty much everybody. It's his job to make people happy, so he's just in a constant state of just playing music, providing skeleton puns. Infinite amount of skeleton puns.
Oh.
Like he said...
The picture is complete now. I understand. You know, like, I get, like, he's a jovial character. He brings joy to people, and, like, he's just generally likable. So, like, I get it, but the skeleton puns completes the Eli and Brooke picture. It's all coming together now.
I'm not embarrassed to say I own a lot of my own idiosyncrasies probably to Brooke, but... And he is so recognizable with his catchphrase laugh. He does the stereotypical yo laugh. So you always know when he's around, all the time.
So what has been, like, what has his story been since, you know, the time skip? Essentially, you know, kind of has he had any, like, major arcs, major events?
He hasn't had a lot of changes. Mm-hmm. However, he did shine in the more recent Whole Cake Island arc. Mm-hmm. This island is essentially controlled by, you'd probably say, the Thanos, one of the Thanoses of the One Piece world.
You just say her name.
Big Mom, who's one of the, like, most powerful creatures in that whole universe. But Brooke in that island just did so much work. He basically went one-on-one with this impossible opponent, and she was like... He was sent on a reconnaissance mission to get something and was caught by her. Mm-hmm. And she was like, oh, you're going to die. And he's like, I can't leave without what I came here for. And she's like, you're really going to risk death? And he basically told her, like, I couldn't live and face my captain knowing I failed him. Mm-hmm. And so that kind of gives you an idea of Brooke's personality. He he is such a jovial, jokey character, but when he needs to get serious, it's just dead. Like, mm-hmm. dead. Yeah. Pardon the pun.
Yeah, oh god.
Yeah, and it just shows that honor is a big theme in One Piece, and I just love all the characters, you know, would rather die than go back on their morals, and Brooke is like, I believe in Luffy, he's my captain, doesn't matter what I face, I like. And then it's one of the best panels I've ever seen of just Brooke.
I've seen so many reinterpretations of that panel where Brooke is like, he looks like an action figure, like
going up against this mountain of an opponent.
Yeah, and it is a really cool image. So yeah, like I understand, you know, like where the love for this character comes from. So let's get into it in just a minute here. Before that, we have a halftime show to go over that's been suggested by a listener. So let's take a quick break, and we'll be right back with you with that halftime show. And welcome to your halftime, which, yes, you may have noticed is not the halftime of the fight itself, but halftime of the show. So
halftime with an asterisk.
Yeah. So what this halftime is, as I mentioned earlier, I'm going to mention it again, we take any and all listener-suggested matchups, and we take them on the show, and we usually almost always mess them up, but we have another one here for you today from Theon. He reached out to me on Instagram, and he is the producer of a podcast called Cards with Esther and Rachel, which is a really hilarious podcast that you should go check out, and he is a big part of that and appears on it quite often. And so he reached out on Instagram with this matchup, and as he called it, I don't want to get this wrong, the Fatal Four Way. And upon, you know, just right there, freeze frame Jay reading Fatal Four Way, I'm like, oh man, what's this gonna be? You know, it's gonna be like some titans of the universe, you know, Godzilla and King Kong, and you know, like Fatal Four Way is a pretty great introduction. And then continuing to read this message, : Battle of the Arnolds.
Okay.
And so we have four Arnolds. We have Arnold from Happy Days, Arnold from Different Strokes, Arnold from The Wonder Years, and Arnold from Hey Arnold.
See, this is going to be difficult because I know exactly one of those Arnolds.
See, you know, I am in the same exact boat. And now we're sorry, Theon. But I did not watch The Wonder Years or any of the other Arnold shows that you have suggested for me. So what I did do is I Googled them and I looked at images of them, and that's about it. Now, I did watch Hey Arnold when I was a kid, as did Eli here. And I just want to read Hey Arnold's versus wiki for you.
We use the versus wiki for, you know, decent amount of our research.
Shout out to versus wiki. It's a great resource for just shenanigans that are super bracket bros.
Yeah, and the Arnold versus wiki entry is maybe the best one.
So here we go. Arnold Shortman is the main protagonist of Hey Arnold. He is kind, caring, brave, peaceful, selfless, smart, and wise. Powers and stats. Tier level. 9C. Sure. Makes sense. Also known as football head. Tracks. Reliable source here. Age. Unknown. You could have just put child, but sure. Now here's where it gets interesting. Powers and abilities. Superhuman physical characteristics.
Is that from coming from the football head?
I think so.
Like, that's not feasible, so they have to assume.
They have to assume it's superhuman. Genius intelligence and martial arts, which I thought was interesting. I liked that. Now, attack potency. Likely street level. In parentheses here, punched a man so hard that his clothes melted in the episode Mugged. Was trained in martial arts by his grandma and could send a can flying. So the melting the clothes part is probably what we're going to focus on for this fight. Speed. Normal human. Lifting strength, normal human. Striking strength, street class. Not human class, street class.
He can strike a street.
Durability, wall level, in parentheses. Survived getting thrown by the front end of a car, hit himself with a plate that shattered, and he sustained no injuries. So right there, that tells me that this is, wall level is actually wrong. As far as we know, Arnold is actually invincible. So stamina, high. Range, melee range. Standard equipment, non notable. Now, we do have a weakness here. Does not really want to fight, but will fight if necessary.
So we don't know the personalities of the other Arnolds.
No, we don't know pretty much anything except that they are normal ass human beings, flesh and blood. Unlike Brooke, unlike Arnold from Hey Arnold.
Well, the thing I'm... Okay, so if Arnold doesn't want to fight unless he's provoked, how antagonistic are the other Arnolds?
Well, see, since this is happening on Super Bracket Bros in our realm...
They're all...
They're all... I would consider... You know, we don't like to use this term, but bloodthirsty.
Okay. I'm sorry, other Arnolds, but you guys don't have a versus wiki page.
That you don't have a versus wiki page. Hey Arnold can stab you with the side of his head. After he punches your clothes off and melts them. So, like, you have no protection from Arnold. And then his head is superhuman. And as we've discussed, he sustains no injuries from plates or otherwise. So, I don't see how anybody but Hey Arnold Arnold wins.
Would he be a one seed?
You know, based on this versus wiki, which I think needs to get updated, you know what? Maybe we'll do that after the show. Yeah. Here.
Do our duty.
Yeah. I'm going to go with Hey Arnold Arnold here.
I think that's the wise decision, and not because we know nothing about the other three.
But because he's animated. So thank you, Theon, for your suggestion. And I'm really sorry. So thank you for tuning in to Super Bracket Bros Halftime, and let's get back to the main show. And welcome back from that brief interlude. So let's get into this fight, shall we?
I'm excited. This is our first roll-off.
Exactly. So as we mentioned in the preview episode, in case you haven't missed it, let's go over it once more. So we are going to be randomizing location, time, and weather for most of this season up until the final four. So we have 100 random locations, we have 20 random weathers, and we have 10 random times. So let's start with location to see if weather and time even matter. And it's going to be number 16. We have Halloween Town, home of Jack Skellington.
Are you shitting me?
This is why I wanted to do it, Eli. This is why I wanted to do it.
So, for those who aren't aware, Brooke is based off Jack Skellington.
There's no...
Straight up, like, Oda's a huge Disney fan and based off of this. Are you serious?
Just for context, like... Minutes ago, before we started recording again and getting into the fight, Eli mentioned to me, he's like, hey, should I mention that Brooke is based off Jack Skellington? And I was like, you can bring it up if it comes up. Are you kidding me? Wait. I didn't even remember this was on the list. There's 100 locations on this list.
I should also mention that in selecting the first fight, we were unaware that One Piece is coming to Netflix tomorrow. Sorry, Friday.
Yeah, June 12th. Came out on Friday. This is coming out on Sunday. So, yeah. One Piece is headed to Netflix. So you can catch a whole lot of One Piece on Netflix if you want when you're listening to this. This episode is chocked full of coincidences.
Very
for you.
Uncanny.
So let's figure out the weather and time here. So... less eventful weather. It's going to be morning in Halloween Town with some sunny weather. So, nice, crisp morning for Brooke and Cyborg to fight in Halloween Town.
Fucking Halloween Town.
So, how does this fight break off?
Well, what I love about both these characters is how they're huge goofballs.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think they're obviously trading jokes right away, right?
Yeah, exactly. So I know there are cyborg characters in One Piece, so I imagine Brook's not very surprised. And then on the other side, we have Cyborg, who's, you know, I mean, encountered Trigon, the literal devil. So
yeah, I don't
probably
think
also not surprised.
Yeah, I think they're sort of like, oh, we'd probably be friends, but something is tempting us to fight. So yo, I think Brook is like, I like this location. It fits me.
Yeah, exactly. He's gonna feel right at home. Like I sort of imagine like Jack Skeleton's gonna be there when the portals open up and they walk out
and
onto
just Spider-Man, the field.
The
Spider-Man meme.
Yeah, exactly. They point at each other. They stop. They're like, "Hey, you."
Jack Skellington is like, how'd you get such wonderful hair? And Brooke's like, I have tremendously strong roots. That's the canon reason why he still has hair, but no flesh.
Oh my god. That's fantastic. So let's start with the fight. So we have Cyborg. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but does Brooke have any ranged capabilities?
Yes, he does. Okay. He, so with the revive fruit, that typically it would just be a one man, an extra life that would mm-hmm. that it wouldn't have any powers. But through Brook's trainings, he's actually learned how to harness his actual soul,
mm-hmm.
and so he's managed to basically summon what he calls ice from the underworld.
Mm-hmm.
He's sort of has minimal ice powers. It's not like Elsa, like from last season or anything.
Right.
He's not like throwing ice walls, mm-hmm. but he can channel frost through his sword, which is in his cane.
Mm-hmm.
So he does have range, but that's not his first go.
Okay,
that's not his first move.
So how does he react to Cyborg's sonic blasts?
Well, Cyborg doesn't even get one off. So like I need to preface by saying Brook is probably the fastest Straw Hat,
mm-hmm.
faster than Luffy.
Yeah.
Luffy is extremely fast, but you see him do like the wind up and everything.
Yeah.
Brook does that whole anime shtick of like walking past the opponent and it's like, hey, you haven't even fought. And he's like, the fight's already over, and he sheathes his sword and the guy just bursts in like
oh god, yeah.
But that gives you an idea of like Brook is the fastest of the Straw Hats.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I see this fight starting, I mentioned his nickname was Humming Brook. That's because when you hear Brook humming, you've basically lost.
Yeah.
So I imagine this fight starting with Cyborg probably cocking the gun, pointing, and Brook walking past him. And he's like, wait, what's going on? And then taking mm-hmm. probably pretty, not, the thing is, Brook's attacks aren't as strong as Luffy's. Mm-hmm. They're basically like mosquito bites, especially for somebody as tanky as Cyborg.
Mm-hmm.
But like Brook is going to get a slash in before Cyborg even knows what's up.
Yeah. And I imagine like, Before he knows that Brook is that fast, because Brook, I mean, he's not exactly running around like Kid Flash. Like you can't look at him and say, "Oh, he's fast."
Yeah,
like that doesn't come across when you look at this skeleton with a sword.
Yeah.
Like you know that's not your first instinct. And so yeah, I totally imagine Cyborg gets caught off guard here.
Yeah, and so it probably leaves a frost trail because Brook is like, this guy's probably pretty beefy. I'll try to and that's. So this shows off the strength of Brook, but also his weakness. He
mm-hmm.
gets this attack in before the opponent knows what's going on,
mm-hmm.
but the attack isn't the heftiest.
Yeah.
It's probably going to catch Cyborg off guard and do, you know, it's a hit, but it's mm-hmm. not going to be like, oh god, like
yeah.
this is going to hamstring Cyborg. It's just going to be a...
Yeah. So let's talk about, like, because Brook is probably going to do most of the hitting because he's going to be a lot faster than Cyborg, what did those hits look like? Like, how much accumulation does it take to take Cyborg down?
So, unlike other swordsmen in One Piece, Brook is based off European sword style. So, he's a fencer.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's lots of jabs. And typically, we see with Brook and his opponents. See, that's a tricky thing. Brook doesn't have a whole lot of one-on-one fights.
Mm-hmm.
He usually deals with minions.
Yeah.
And, like, lower-level lieutenants on the pirate's crews. Like, Cyborg is such a beefy tank.
Yeah, like, that's the thing. Like, Cyborg, like, he takes a ton of hits and takes a ton of hits from people that are much bigger than him, too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, you talk about Adonis and you talk about Atlas. Like, those are the heavy hitters. That's who Cyborg usually gravitates towards in a fight. So, like, he's used to taking huge impacts. But those are also fists, you know, mm-hmm. versus slashes.
Yeah,
you know, I think are different.
With piercing damage.
Yeah, and so I guess are Brook's attacks more like long cuts, or are they more jabs?
Lots of jabs.
So I almost think that that's a little bit of a disadvantage, because I could see if there were cuts. I mean, like, Cyborg's appendages aren't exactly fully attached. Like, they come apart fairly often.
Yeah, I could totally see Brooke's strategy of just, like, basically picking, because like you said, cyborgs are common. There's a cyborg on the Straw Hat crew, so Brooke mm-hmm. knows the mechanics of a cyborg person, so
right.
I'm guessing he can say, I can disassemble you if I hit you in the right places.
Mm-hmm.
But like, just square jabs, I would almost have to say, like, maybe like 30 or 40, because yeah. they're not super powerful.
So you said he has ice powers. When he's jabbing, is there like ice appearing on Cyborg's body? Is it like an accumulation?
Yeah, I'd say so. It's almost like sort of like frost, like you'd see in Morning Dew or something.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like, oh, that's just a scrape of ice, but if so many attacks, the ice starts accumulating, it'll start mm-hmm. slowing, especially if piercing, because that gets into Cyborg systems. That yeah. can be very detrimental.
Yeah, and like there's the moment where Cyborg is fighting Brother Blood, and Brother Blood, you know, takes his fingers and essentially just jabs straight into Cyborg's chest. But it's because he's read his schematics. He's read, he knows how Cyborg actually works. And so, you know, you don't really see that in many other moments during the Teen Titans series. And so I guess, like, let's transition into, like, what does Cyborg do offensively against Brooke? What can he do?
I give it to Cyborg. I think he'll start catching up.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he's going to be lagging behind for too long in this fight. Maybe like a few of the piercing starts accumulating. He starts mm-hmm. recognizing, okay, he's going for these specific parts.
Yeah.
Because Brooke without his sword is kind of pretty much useless.
Mm-hmm.
So I can imagine him almost baiting Brooke to like stab him and then grabbing the sword.
Oh, yeah. I mean, at some point, he's got to use his tech to set a trap. You know, make an argument for it. Like, he could lay some sort of sonic trap for Brooke, you know, because both his arms do turn into the sonic cannons. It's unfortunate that they're sonic cannons when obviously you're dealing with a character that moves faster than sound. So, like, I guess, is there any question of, like, Brooke's stamina that we can talk about?
Well, that's the weird thing. He's a skeleton,
mm-hmm.
so he doesn't have any vital organs, so his defense is surprisingly strong.
Mm-hmm. Like, you said his defense is relatively strong, but, like, what kind of hits are we talking about?
See, his big thing is, like, getting hit by blades. That's what really does him in. That's where you start chipping at the bone, because yeah. you literally have to... We've seen Brooke get decapitated, mm-hmm. and his soul manages to put it back on his body.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to really deconstruct those bones. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, explosions might be Cyborg's best bet here.
Yeah. Because he also, in his shoulders, he has the shoulder missile launchers as well that he could use to scatter his bones. I'm sort of imagining this taking place in the graveyard in Halloween Town, where
with the
loopy
hill,
with the weird looking hill.
Somewhere deep inside of these bones,
exactly. And so, I mean, if Cyborg can get to a high ground, I mean, but I imagine Brooke has the ability to like scale that hill from any angle. Like, he just doesn't have to come up from the one side.
Well, like, one leap, remember, him being bones means that he's super light.
Mm-hmm.
So he's been seen running on water,
yeah,
because he weighs nothing. So
yeah.
being able to jump up high is he's basically as light as a feather.
Yeah. What kind of hits does Cyborg need to do, assuming that he can land the hits? What kind of hits does he need to deliver to Brooke to defeat him?
I think just square, just hits to the jaw. Like I mm-hmm. said, Brooke is surprisingly tanky, but he's still just bones. He doesn't mm-hmm. have muscle to defend himself with.
Yeah.
You know, give enough square hits to the jaw, to the bones. Like, those are bones. They're probably going to break, unless he has milk nearby to start
yeah.
chugging.
Yeah. I don't know if there's vast milk supplies in Halloween Town.
But I can totally see, you know, I remember Cyborg's arm turning into a rocket.
Mm-hmm.
If he just gets a rocket-propelled punch, that mm-hmm. would do some serious damage
yeah.
to Brooke.
Because, I mean, yeah, almost in the essence of the trap, you know, if he launches his arms and like leaves himself exposed and the arms, you know, come up from the sides or come up from behind to defeat Brooke, you know, like that could be a viable strategy. But I mean, then, you know, Brooke has the reactions to knock them away possibly.
But it's going to be tricky. Like, his reactions won't mean much if, you know, maybe Cyborg, you know, bails out into the forest maybe and sets up some explosives.
Mm-hmm.
I think explosives are his big thing. I think Brooke isn't strong against explosives. I think that'll do a serious amount of damage, especially if he can trap him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think, like, Cyborg is intelligent enough to see that strategy as well, because, I mean, he's not the most tactical Teen Titan. But he's definitely up there, and, you know, like, and especially in using technology. So, yeah, I guess it's just a matter of if he's fast enough to get those hits in. Could he grapple with Brook? I mean, like, is the sword strong enough? I mean, like, if Cyborg went to try to grab the sword, or like to try to hold Brook.
Yeah, if he grabs Brook, I don't think Brook has a lot of options. He has no punching power at all. All of his power is reliant on that sword. So if any way Cyborg can get a hold of Brook, mm-hmm. and more than anything get that sword away from Brook, mm-hmm. like, Brook doesn't have any options.
Yeah. It seems to me, like, I wouldn't call Brook a glass cannon mm-hmm. necessarily, but, like, all his eggs are in one basket, seems like.
He's a very interesting fighter. I mean, he seems like he'd qualify as a glass cannon, but we've seen him take huge hits. Like that Big Mom I was telling you about, mm-hmm. she just straight up punched Brook, and, like, it knocked him out, but his bones were still intact. So there's still a level of durability there, plus the whole soul element. No matter how chipped and damaged the bones get, so long as his soul is keeping him together, mm-hmm. even if he's just crawling, you know?
Yeah. And...
even though that's a haunting image.
I know. And Cyborg buries him in the graveyard in Halloween Town, like, this is where you belong.
Get down. One thing I do want to bring up, and this isn't the best look for Brook especially, he's only had a handful of one-on-one fights, and he's lost most of them. Mm. He's only won probably like two or three. Mm. Granted, one was against essentially a stronger clone of himself, and the other one was against Big Mom, who is like end boss.
Yeah.
But it's still...
like, he tried to skip to the end and, like, got smacked.
Well, he didn't try to skip to the end. He got caught by the end.
Yeah.
But there's still a point in one-on-one fights. We haven't seen Brook win a whole lot. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, he usually just dispatches minions and things like that.
Crowd control.
Yeah, he's the ultimate crowd control. And against one-on-one fights, you know, it's not that we see him get overwhelmed. He just gets outclassed. Because mm-hmm. at some point, all those mosquito bites and all that technique, people start recognizing, like, okay, he's attacking from here and here. Like, he's, mm-hmm. you know, his attacks are fast, but they're still telegraphed. Yeah. And if you can catch the patterns, once, like, if Cyborg just grabs the sword and just punches Brook is like, he.
Right. Yeah. And, like, as soon as he's detached from that sword, like, I don't think based on what you're telling me about the sword, like, I don't think he can, like, break it over his knee or anything. But, I mean, he can still keep it away from Brook. And that's, I mean, as far as I can tell, like, that's sort of it, you know.
Yeah, because Brook, like, pulls out his guitar and starts playing.
Yeah, exactly. Like, so, I mean, it's hard to ignore how outclassed Cyborg is speed wise. But as far as, like, one on one fights go, you know, like, Cyborg has a decent amount during the series, but, you know, it's interesting that he also, like, is very effective at crowd control with the cannon.
And Brook has won, like, a few one-on-ones, but they're just not to the level of, you know, Luffy always has the one-on-one.
Right, yeah, like, he's Zoro, the guy.
Zoro has the one-on-one, Sanji does, but, mm-hmm. I mean, the top four of the Straw Hats versus the bottom six are, the power is so crazy different.
Yeah.
Not that, I mean, though, the rest of the crew always handles, like, lieutenants and things like that, and their fights are, you know, they're entertaining, but they're, a lot of jokes are thrown in.
Yeah. Like, I know what you mean.
Like the one big one-on-one Brook had, it was so silly. Like, I'm not even gonna lie. Like, he basically one-shot the dude.
Yeah.
But it was still just this weird, this goofy rigmarole of, like, yeah, time to finish this.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I think we're rounding down to decisions here. Is there any last things you want to bring up before we get into it?
I will say Brook relies on jabs a lot, but his finishers often are those slashes. Mm-hmm. And that's where he gets, like, the really streaks of ice that just, like, cut, you know, in half and just leave him cold. Mm-hmm. We haven't mentioned it a whole lot, but Brook does have the range that I mentioned earlier. He can shoot those beams of ice mm-hmm. at a distance. So if Cyborg is, you know, doing melee and hitting Brook can retreat and just start doing pot shots, but those are exceptionally, like, weak mosquito bites.
Yeah.
But it's still something to consider.
Yeah. I think, like, almost certainly, I think if he starts shooting at Cyborg and Cyborg starts shooting back, then I don't think that's going to be a very viable strategy.
Yeah, I really don't.
Yeah. Like, missiles or sonic cannons or whatever Cyborg can throw at him. Like, yeah, I think Cyborg definitely takes the distance advantage there. So how we decide the winners here, since it's just the two of us, we both give an out of 10 in favor of whoever we believe who would win, and whoever's more confident, if we disagree, the winner, that's who the winner will be. So, you know, obviously if we disagree and we have the same confidence, then we have a further discussion. But I think let's get into our decisions. So I'll go first. So based on everything that we've said and based on the experiences that we've laid out for both these characters, I think I'm going to lean Cyborg, and I think I'm going to go 7 out of 10 times. I think I'm going to go Cyborg because, like, the speed disadvantage is pretty steep, but really, like, Cyborg is analytical, he's tactical. I think at some point, like, I don't think he's going to get taken down before he can figure out where the next hit's going to come from. And with that, he can either lay some sort of explosive trap, whether it's a grenade or it's a missile or it's a, you know, a sonic cannon, if he, you know, because if he pushes Brooke one way with the sonic cannon and figures out, okay, when I shoot right at him, then he's going to come from my right, you know, like 45 degrees back into the right, you know, and then he has his second arm ready there, ready to launch. And maybe he misses the first couple times and Brooke has the advantage. I think Brooke has the advantage for a large portion of this fight, but I think it just takes one moment from Cyborg to put Brooke down, and not to put him down, but to disable him from doing any further major damage, because the range that Brooke presents doesn't seem like range versus range, Cyborg wins, like, no matter how fast Brooke is. And so, you know, like, I think there's a couple wins there for Brooke. He gets in there fast and he starts taking off limbs and moves, because, I mean, like, Cyborg can move his limbs independently, but, I mean, then you're talking about limbs dragging themselves across Halloween Town. They're not going to go fast enough to get to Cyborg before he gets defeated, before he gets frozen, probably. Because Cyborg is so tanky, I think he takes a ton of hits, and I think he takes enough hits to be able to deliver one or two perfect counterattacks.
Yeah, I think as much as it hurts me, because Brooke is my favorite,
yeah,
and a running theme in this show is all my favorite characters fucking losing, but I think I'm gonna go Cyborg too, but I'm only going 6 out of 10 times.
Mm-hmm.
For pretty much everything you said, I trust Cyborg way too much to catch on.
Yeah,
from what we've seen, mm-hmm, from the show, how many times he's gone plus Ultra,
mm-hmm,
you know, when both, I think I say 6 out of 10, I totally see both these fighters winded and getting tired towards the end of the fight. Mm-hmm. And I think in that moment, Cyborg will deliver a better finishing blow than Brooke will.
Yeah.
And the second Cyborg catches on and Brooke loses that first step, because mm-hmm, he's such a first step fighter, if he isn't like overwhelming the opponent right away and they start catching on, Brooke's at an extreme disadvantage. That's how he's lost one of his like big one-on-one fights, was the guy just overwhelmed him.
Yeah.
And so I just trust Cyborg too much to catch on. Yeah, I just don't see Brooke having an option for a lot of Cyborg's counterattacks. Mm-hmm. Brooke is, you know, he's not a one-dimensional fighter, but his strategy is pretty cut and plain, and
yeah,
it makes me sad. But I will go Cyborg 6 out of 10 times. I just think Brooke's speed, I think, is enough to get him 4 wins, but yeah, mm-hmm, I think the ingenuity and just tankiness of Cyborg is too much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the tank plus intelligence is enough to overcome the speed deficit here.
Yo!
That sums up the end of our first battle from the round of 32 of season 2. So Cyborg moves on.
I think they're chill afterwards.
Yeah, no, I think they're chill.
They share some milk.
Yeah. Exactly. Like, Jack Skellington comes up, puts a couple of jugs of milk in their hands. Good job, boys.
Disney brand of milk.
Yeah.
And Cyborg has such an advantage going on because whomever loses to the opponent is now part of their cheer section.
Mm-hmm.
Cyborg's got Brooke and the cheer section.
Yeah.
That is like oh my god.
Yeah. So we have Brooke, he's going to be cheering Cyborg on, and Cyborg next round is going to be facing the winner of Mega Man, the 7 seed, and Venom, the 2 seed. So make sure to tune in next week to find out who wins that fight, and you'll know who goes up against Cyborg. Just want to reiterate, make sure to follow us on Instagram and Facebook. Both of them are Super Bracket Bros. And if you have any halftime suggestions, make sure to email us at superbracketbros@gmail.com. Do you have anything else for our dear listeners, Eli?
No, 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 no. No, 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 no. No, 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 no.
Thank you so much for listening to Super Bracket Bros. My name is Jay, and for Eli here, remember, no true hero is a one-trick pony. Sayonara minato, tsumugi no sato yo, don to icho uta ofuna de no uta, kimpa gimpa mo shibuki ni kaete, ore tachi yukuzo umi no kagiri.